Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Aptly enough, the name matches the program. Hope you've all had a great week. Looking forward to a terrific Columbus Day weekend coming up as summer is ending and fall seems to be taking over. It's been an interesting week. We all know that there was the first presidential debate. President Obama went up against Mitt Romney, and frankly, I think he got his clock cleaned. And I think there's a reason for it, and we'll get into it. But let me start out by telling you that I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the INS. Those of you who are familiar with my background know that I have been at it for more than a decade since the terrorist attacks of 9/11, trying to call attention to just how important our nation's immigration laws are, how immigration is not a single issue but rather a singular issue that impacts just about every challenge and threat that our country and our citizens face today, whether we're talking about national security, criminal justice, community safety, the economy, unemployment, education, health care, public health. You know, the immigration laws are designed for just two purposes: to protect American lives and protect American jobs. And ever since 9/11, ever since I did congressional hearings and provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission that appeared on so many radio and television programs, people said to me, how much can one person talk about immigration? How involved is immigration in all these issues? What can you possibly talk about it week in and week out? And let me tell you, because of the profound impact that immigration has on so many aspects of our country, and even the future of our country, my question is, how could you not possibly talk about it? And remarkably, it is a rare program in this day and age that is willing to broach the subject. And so that is why I am here. I am here to provide the information that you're likely not getting anywhere else. If you want to read a little bit more about my background, you can certainly go to my website, michaelcutler.net, MichaelCutler, one word, michaelcutler.net. I also have another website, talkborder.com, where I've posted videos of interviews, pardon me, interviews of people really well worth listening to, including, for example, Congressman Lou Barletta, formerly the mayor of the town of Hazleton, Pennsylvania. I've known Lou for years. I was the final witness at the trial when he and his town were sued by the ACLU because he enacted local ordinances in an effort to pick up the slack not being picked up by the federal government where immigration was concerned. And he'd seen firsthand how an influx of transnational criminals, drug traffickers and the like, into his community were resulting in the loss of life and the loss of peace of mind for the folks who lived in this bucolic town in the hills of Pennsylvania. So he certainly got it, and it was a privilege to help him. I've helped others, but I did an interview with Lou Barletta. I did an interview with Tom Machete. Thomas Machete is a retired New York City cop. His brother, Robert Machete, was killed by an illegal alien who I had personally put on an airplane after he'd been ordered deported from the United States. Ronaldo Rayside came back to the United States illegally, was arrested by members of the New York City Police Department on two separate occasions. And because of sanctuary policies, the cops that arrested this dirtbag never notified immigration that they had in custody an illegal alien who'd been previously deported. The third time they released this guy, or rather they released him two times, the third time he's encountered by a police officer, it's Officer Robert Machete and his partner. Ronaldo Rayside goes for Machete's gun, bullets fly, and a 24-year-old police officer lost his life on a street corner in Brooklyn. He was part of the Brooklyn South Task Force. I spent years working with the NYPD in general and specifically with the Brooklyn South Task Force on so many occasions. And meanwhile, his wife was pregnant with a daughter he would never meet. So I interviewed his brother, Thomas Machete, and a host of other people. I think it's really worth your while to check that out. And, of course, finally, those of you familiar with me know that I am a senior fellow with a terrific organization known as CAPS, C-A-P-S. And that, of course, is an acronym for Californians for Population Stabilization. Their headquarters is in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara. I had the great joy of visiting that neighborhood, that part of our country, on a number of occasions, made some good friends out there. Terrific part of the country, great organization. And if you look at the way that California has been hammered and continues to get hammered because of its sanctuary policies, because they have the largest illegal alien population in the country, you can understand why this organization came to be and what their concerns are. These should be the concerns of all of our cities and all of our states, because increasingly the impact of illegal immigration is being felt everywhere. And by the way, let's be very clear about this. This isn't about vilifying immigrants. It's simply about saying, let's make sure that the immigration laws that are designed to protect American lives and American jobs are enforced. And if you want to read the great materials that they have on their website, including commentaries that I and others have written, go to their website. It's capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. So we've got business out of the way. I want to turn my attention first to the debate tonight, and then I want to tell you about a story that was being covered by Bret Baier on Fox News. I got to tell you, it's one of those stories where you scratch your head and ask yourself, did I just hear this right? So I went online and found on the Fox News website an unbelievable story, but we will put that on a back burner. I will just tell you that it deals with training being given to the employees of USDA. I mean, you cannot make this stuff up. But meanwhile, let's go back to the debate. The focus of this debate this past week, as you know, if you watched, was the economy and jobs. And what's remarkable is that not a word was said by either candidate about immigration. And several things occurred to me. First of all, I think Mitt Romney was spot on with what he did and how he did it. And, you know, my degree back in the old days was in communications, arts, and sciences. I like to tell people I have a BA and BS. And Mitt Romney really provided a classic example of everything you should do. And Obama came up with a classic example of what you should not do. And I guess in Mr. Obama's case, probably it's not a matter of not bringing a knife to a gunfight, but it's about not bringing a teleprompter to a public speaking event. Because quite frankly, I've always felt that without a teleprompter, all too often the president appears to be a marionette with no strings. He has to have that printed word. And I have to tell you, this leads me to a discussion I had a couple of years ago with one of the counsels on Capitol Hill. You know, you make friends along the way in Washington when you do the hearings and participate in the discussions and so forth. And I had an idea. You know, the Gettysburg Address, one of the most revered and remembered speeches in all of American history, at least according to legend, was penned by President Abraham Lincoln as he sat on a train, scribbled it on the back of an envelope, 67 years ago, and you know the rest. These were the words of the President of the United States. He then went on to deliver them. Today, we have politicians who hire speechwriters. They may as well be script writers. We don't know who writes what they say. And just think about that. It's hard enough to get a person to be a man or woman of their word. In this case, very often, it isn't even their words that they're speaking. So I would love to see a law that's enacted that says that when a candidate is on the campaign trail and delivering a campaign speech, that perhaps what they need to do is sign certification under the penalty of perjury. Boy, could you imagine any politician being warned about perjury, with few exceptions? And there are a few, Lou Barletta being one, Steve King, Jeff Sessions, Chuck Grassley. There's some heroes out there, but not enough. Believe me, not enough. But under the penalty of perjury, they would have to attest to the fact that they either wrote the speech that they deliver on the stump or give credit where it's due and stop plagiarizing. Because I want to know who's writing those words. I want to know if there's even a breath of a chance that that politician reading that flowery speech even has an intention of doing what is being promised in those speeches, you know? So just something to think about. But wouldn't that be an interesting turn of events if politicians had to divulge, just the way they do at the end of the movie, you know, they run the credits, who the writer was and who the cinematographer was and who did the sound work and who did special effects. I'd love to know who wrote the speech. Simple question. Who wrote the speech? And I'd like to see some kind of a vow that, yes, I will do everything in my power to make good on these promises, because boy, oh boy, the day after Election Day, you know what happens to all too many of those promises from politicians of both political parties. So my cynicism perhaps is showing. But what was remarkable is that with all the talk about creating jobs, I'm disappointed, frankly, that Mitt Romney didn't talk about the need to liberate jobs, free up the jobs now being held by illegal aliens. You know, they were just talking about the unemployment rate on Fox News. And they were saying that over the past couple of years, the unemployment rate for the Latino population has been at around the 10% mark, and it has climbed over the past 2 years. Well, I have a hunch that part of the reason, perhaps, that those numbers have been climbing is that we have generally seen that when illegal aliens take the jobs of Americans, they generally take it from the people of similar ethnicity or the same ethnicity. And illegal immigration is not just about Latinos. We really have to be so clear about this, because the open borders crowd, and I've come to call them the immigration anarchists, really want to make it sound as though if you want the immigration laws enforced, then you don't like people with brown skin, you're anti-Hispanic, anti-Latino, anti-Mexican. That's not what the laws are about. The reason that the great majority of illegal aliens in the United States are from Latin America is a function of geography. It's just that simple. To get to the United States from Mexico, all you have to do is walk across the border. To come to the United States from Europe or Asia or Africa, now we're talking about an airplane trip, we're talking about boat rides, whatever. You know, we're talking about moving from one hemisphere to the other, one continent to the other. But if you're coming from Mexico, it's part of the North American continent, it's just a matter of getting across that 2,000-plus mile border that is, by the way, unique in that it's the only place on the planet where the first world collides with the third world. That's not to say we don't have a problem with aliens coming here from other countries. I've often made the point that we are a nation of 50 border states, because any state that has a seaport or an international airport is as much a border state as are the states that are found along the Mexican or Canadian borders. But by and large, the largest number of people who enter the United States evading the inspections process do so by running our land borders. So this leads to people from Latin America, although there is a growing number of what are known as OTMs, other than Mexicans, also running that border. They get into Latin America from other countries and then try to sneak into the country so that there's no record of their entry, no way of knowing that they're here, no way of establishing a time that they got here and so forth, which is done when people enter the United States through ports of entry. Well, in my experience as an agent, usually, within an ethnic community, illegal aliens from Mexico or Latin America will take the jobs that would normally be held by members of the Hispanic community. Not always. It's not a hard, fast rule. Everybody doesn't do the same work. That kind of profiling and stereotyping is wrong-headed and not accurate. But if you look statistically, what we do find is that America's minorities suffer the worst when they have to compete with illegal aliens. That's just the sad reality of how things seem to be. So you have to wonder if there is not a direct correlation between the escalating numbers of American minority members who are out of work, unemployed, underemployed, and the continuing failures of this administration to enforce the immigration laws. Because I'll tell you what this does also. It not only means that we're not removing illegal aliens, it means that now the administration has, in essence, fired a starter's pistol. They have served message on people around the world, they've served notice, rather, that if you enter the United States, violate our immigration laws, as long as you're not convicted for committing a series of felonies, we have no interest in you. We are not going to look for you. We're not going to arrest you. If we find you, we're going to throw you back, so to speak. Maybe even give you employment authorization. Well, if you're contemplating violating our borders and coming to the United States to get an illegal job, for example, guess what they've just been told? Run the border, don't get arrested, and you can enter the United States. Of course, the real risk here is that among the folks that are simply looking for work, and that's a serious enough problem, going back to the unemployment issue, the remittances wired out of our country, and so forth. But in addition to that problem, this is a wonderful opportunity for the terrorists and a horrific situation for us. Because all that a terrorist now has to do is run the border, enter the United States, take a nondescript job someplace, keep a low profile, and wait for the phone call telling him or her that tomorrow's the day. I've made this point before congressional hearings. I've made this point whenever I've been out there doing public appearances. The day or two before a terrorist attack, a terrorist is likely to hide in plain sight, or to use the parlance of the 9/11 Commission, embed himself or herself by going to their job. That's how you hide in plain sight. And if you look statistically at all the terrorists that have been identified since 9/11, so many of them had jobs that provided them with two things, mobility and camouflage. Airport bus driver, van driver, limo driver, taxi cab driver, ice cream truck driver. The word driver appears frequently. Up in Toronto several years ago, they found a school bus driver who was using the school bus as a way of also recruiting teenage boys into a terror cell that he was attempting to put together. So understand that when we don't enforce immigration laws, when the administration makes it clear to people around the world that our borders don't matter, that you can run the border without any problem, that nobody will look for you, that nobody will seek to arrest you, that you can do whatever you want as long as you don't commit felonies. You've now told people how to get here, how to hide in plain sight. Think about how worrisome that is when we're talking about terrorists and gang members and so forth. We're being told that the borders have never been more secure, and the metric the administration wants us to believe are the arrest statistics of the Border Patrol, the same Border Patrol that's scared to death to make arrests. And look at the violence on the border. Earlier this week, a 31-year-old Border Patrol agent, a horseback agent, you know, one of the mountains, was shot and killed. One of his other compadres, partners, if you will, was wounded. A third Border Patrol agent escaped without harm. But this was apparently a gunfight between the Border Patrol and drug traffickers. And these agents worked out of a newly named Bryan Terry Border Patrol station. Bryan Terry, of course, was the Border Patrol agent who was shot and killed a couple of years ago, a couple of days before Christmas. He had returned from the military. He had served over in the Middle East. True American hero. He was part of BORTAC, the Border Patrol Tactical Unit. He was armed apparently with beanbags, and apparently the thugs who killed him shot him in the back, were armed with firearms that the United States so nicely gave the Mexican cartels through that program known as Fast and Furious, where at least 2,000 high-powered weapons were transferred to the Mexican cartels, in fact, specifically the Sinaloa cartel. And those guns are killing people. There was just a story this week how 16 teenage kids in Mexico were now found to have been killed by Fast and Furious firearms. And the list will continue to grow. And I assure you that some of those guns will make their way to the United States if they're not already here. Because let me tell you how the cartels operate. Their goal is to get their drugs into the United States and to get the money, the proceeds from the sale of those drugs back to Mexico so they can put the money into their till and use it for whatever purposes, bribery, buying weapons, expanding their sphere of influence, and so forth, waging a war against their competitors. In order to make certain that the drugs go where they're supposed to go and that all the money goes home, they send over their people. the key people in any drug cartel activity are people from the native country, because they have control over these people. Number one, they've known them for a while. Number two, they know where the family members live back home. And the people who work for the cartel know damn well that if they double-cross the cartel, not only will they pay the price, but their mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and children and cousins and you name it are likely to be killed, and not just killed, but tortured, maimed, and then killed. This is an enemy that you have to see to believe, or perhaps you'd rather not see. So part of the problem we have, of course, is this open border. And we're told, well, the arrests are down, so nobody's coming. Well, if the border was secure, ladies and gentlemen, how on earth are the drugs still coming to the United States? That's the question nobody asks. If the borders were secured, how are the drugs, cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine, coming to the United States? And when you talk about cocaine and heroin, that stuff is purely produced outside the United States. So any dummy who's snorting that garbage or shooting up that poison is using a substance that was smuggled into the United States. There is my metric about whether or not the border is secure. Forget the doctored arrest statistics from the Border Patrol. Look at the drugs, look at the price of the drugs, the availability of the drugs, and you will see clearly that our borders are not secure. And it's estimated that 70% of crime in America, directly or indirectly, is drug-related. So where is the shocker that the border's not secure? I hope that Governor Romney goes after that issue in the coming debates. I hope. Because this is such a critically important issue. Because you need to know that not only are the proceeds from drug sales going into the drug cartels, but in some cases, the proceeds from the drug trade goes into the terrorist organizations such as the Taliban. They move the heroin, they get the money, they take the money, they buy weapons, and they're killing their own people as well as our GIs. This is lunacy. This is sheer, unmitigated lunacy. So it was interesting that with all the debate, all the discussion this past week about the unemployment rate, we didn't hear anything about the lack of immigration enforcement and how this impacts the job situation. What most people don't know, and I know I've mentioned on the program before, bear with me if I'm being repetitious, but this is a point worth making. Prior to the Second World War, the responsibility for enforcing the immigration laws of the United States, for administering the immigration laws of the United States, for securing our border against unauthorized entry by aliens, those responsibilities fell squarely on the shoulders of the United States Department of Labor. Because the concern was that if we flooded the labor market with lots of foreign workers, two things would happen. The foreign workers would take the jobs Americans needed, and labor is a commodity, not unlike diamonds, not unlike water, not unlike petroleum. If you flood the market with whatever it is you want to talk about, what happens then is that the prices drop. This is classic economics, supply and demand. Flood the, it's a commodity. Dump lots of commodity on the market, leave the demand the same, the price goes down. If you can control the commodity, the price goes up. That's why the De Beers Company is very big, on controlling the flow of diamonds into the marketplace. They are involved with the diamond mines and the production of diamonds. So they make sure that only a small percentage of gemstone quality diamonds are actually put on the market at any given year, to control the supply, to control the price. Here, the exact opposite is happening. Labor is being dumped on the market. Wages are dropping. It's not without reason that America's government, America's leaders, during that era, when World War II was going full blast, that we now look back with such reverence and longing at those leaders who were called the greatest generation. It was the fact that the Labor Department protected the American worker that gave rise to the middle class. the biggest, most vibrant, and upwardly mobile middle class in the history of this planet. There are other countries today, by the way, folks, where it's easier to move up the economic ladder than the United States. Because what we're seeing are politicians in Washington selling out to corporations who only say a pledge of allegiance, not to the flag, but to the bottom line. And through the wonders of campaign finance, something that I refer to as legalized bribery, these corporations and people with very deep pockets, for the most part, are getting the best government money can buy. So look at what has happened to the middle class. Look at what has happened to the what used to be upwardly mobile United States of America and its citizens. And then look what happened with immigration and lack of border security. And I will tell you there is a strong correlation between the two. Alan Greenspan, and I know I've talked about it before, but I got to make the point, back on April 30th, 2009, when he testified for Chuck Schumer, the senator from New York State, previously congressman from New York, used to be my congressman, but frankly, never my representative, even though I'm a registered Democrat, because he just doesn't seem to care what the impact is on the American workforce. He held a hearing, had Alan Greenspan come in, and Alan Greenspan actually had the chutzpah, as we like to say in Brooklyn, to refer to Americans who had skills as the privileged elite, and he complained bitterly about what he called the wage premiums being paid to this group of privileged elite Americans who were getting salaries that were at non-competitive levels, and that the solution was to increase immigration quotas so that with wage pricing mechanism, that is to say competition from overseas, we could eliminate the premium. Premium my backside, we could cut the wages of hardworking Americans. And at the very end of that paragraph, Greenspan made it real clear. He said that we need to eliminate or greatly reduce inequality in wages. And boy, that sounds good. We've all been taught, and rightfully so, that inequality is a bad thing if it's based on race, if it's based on religion, if it's based on ethnicity, if it's based on gender, if it's based on age. But that wasn't what he talked about, because he said that we need to reduce or eliminate this disparity based on skill. Well, folks, the American dream was all about getting that better education so you could earn more money. That's what provided the incentive for so many Americans to go to school. That's why when soldiers returned from the Second World War, and the GI Bill gave them opportunities to go to school, they availed themselves those opportunities so they could make more money. We linked education and skill sets to an increased paycheck. My father was a construction worker, but he was a plumber, a tradesman. There was an interesting article on CNN last week talking about how in Europe they're going back to this idea of trade schools. I don't think a plumber or an electrician or a carpenter or a bricklayer or an iron worker is any less important to our society than a surgeon or an accountant, a lawyer, or a school teacher. You know, America, folks, is a very big orchestra, and we all need to play an instrument. And that's not to say we're all going to make the same money, but certainly a skilled craftsman, a tradesman, should get money that is decent enough that he or she can support his family on it and be a solid member of the middle class. We are beating the hell out of our middle class today. We are taking away the incentives for our kids to go to college because they know when they get out of college they will have run up a student loan that probably looks more like a mortgage payment, and the likelihood is they will not be able to find a job. So what was the point to the exercise in the first place? So this is an area that I really and truly hope that Mitt Romney will hammer away at during the coming debates. By the way, if you want to call in, my phone number here is 310-982-4145. Again, that number, 310-982-4145. And now I have to tell you the story that I opened the program with. When you hear this, I think you're going to fall out of your chair unless you've already seen it. Let me read the headline. USDA diversity training session included, quote, illegal immigrants chant group claims. Now, I want you to think about that. And by the way, I guess it's the Chicago way, looking at the article, let me start out by reading the first paragraph of this Fox News report. The U.S. government paid a Chicago consultant hundreds of thousands of dollars to put on diversity training workshops that, according to one watchdog, included an exercise in which employees were told to chant. You got to listen to this, folks. This is what they were told to chant. Our forefathers were illegal immigrants. Did you catch that? Let me read that paragraph again. The U.S. government paid a Chicago consultant hundreds of thousands of dollars to put on diversity training workshops that, according to one watchdog, included an exercise in which employees were told to chant, quote, our forefathers were illegal immigrants, unquote. And it goes on and says that the conservative group Judicial Watch made that claim this week as it released a handful of documents pertaining to the program and alleged that the sessions held by the Department of Agriculture ended up enforcing political views more than promoting tolerance. Now, I'd love to know what the point was for the Agriculture Department to be teaching its people something that's not true, by the way, on top of everything else. Now, I also want you to know something else. Whenever you get into a debate about immigration, and you folks out there who are familiar with me, who've read my stuff at michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org, if you've seen my interviews, Talk Border and elsewhere, you know, I've done a lot of these debates. And one of the first things that we hear is, oh, my God, who's going to pick the crops? What are we going to do with all the food rotting in the fields if we get rid of the illegal aliens? So here's the Agriculture Department making certain that a political message, propaganda, if you will, brainwash. I mean, I don't know what words to use to describe this. This is so bizarre as to really be hard to believe, but there it is. There it is. So they're being given this idea, I guess, that we need all these illegal aliens. So, you know, the way I like to differentiate things and make things clear for people is through the use of analogies. And I've often made the point that the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. But I just am amazed because we're always hearing that if it weren't for the illegal aliens, foods would rot in the field. Cesar Chavez started the United Farm Workers Union. And we always hear about Cesar Chavez. Now, Cesar Chavez, it's actually Cesar Chavez, I guess, was very much upset with illegal immigration because many of the migrant farm workers who toil away doing that stoop labor in the fields are actually United States citizens. And just like any other job, Chavez understood that if you flooded that job, that industry, with foreign workers, wages would go down. And that's exactly what's happened. Wages have gone down. There was a story that appeared not that long ago about how illegal aliens are being treated in tomato farms. And, you know, every now and again, we read about how there's an outbreak of E. coli or salmonella or some other vicious bacteria in the food that we eat. Well, this article was talking about the tomato farms and how illegal aliens were living in the back of trucks, taking ice-cold showers, barely getting two meals a day, let alone three, and not having a bathroom to use, so they were apparently defecating out there in the fields where the plants were. Wonder where the bacteria is coming from, folks. So Cesar Chavez said, look, illegal immigration is a bad thing. You know, we have Americans who want to do the work. And there is a legal pathway for farm workers to come to the United States. And we need to talk a little bit about that just for a few minutes. You may not know this, but citizens of Mexico are able to get an unlimited number of farm worker visas, and they can very often get their application processed the same day. Why isn't that system being used? Why isn't that system being policed? One of the experiences that I had as an immigration agent, and I think this is why so many of the immigration anarchists really don't like to have to confront me, is because I'm able to tell the stories of what I actually saw. And what I saw as an agent were numerous instances where aliens from Jamaica and Panama and elsewhere were admitted into the United States to do farm work, to work in the citrus groves of Florida, citrus groves of California, the apple orchards of New York State and elsewhere. And then they never showed up on the farm, or they might have shown up for a week or two and said, gee, this work is too hard, I'm going to go elsewhere. If we don't police the system to make certain that people that get work visas really work on the jobs for which they were given visas, then what happens is that aliens who simply want to come to America, either to take a different job or maybe become involved in crime, because we found out about these particular individuals who failed to show up on the farm because they got involved with a different cash crop. It was marijuana initially and then cocaine, and they were extremely violent. We were chasing homicide after homicide with the cops over the drug trade. So if you're not going to police the system, then these folks are simply going to get themselves a farm visa or a student visa, enter the United States. It's a better alternative than going to some smuggler in Mexico where you don't know if you're going to be forced to take drugs with you into the United States, where the women are being raped, the men are being beaten and robbed, and then they're being held for ransom, because once they bring them here, they put them into a drop house, and they call up the family, and they say, well, you know what, we got your brother, but we're not going to release him until you come up with another $5,000. And if you don't come up with the $5,000, sooner or later he may die. So all these people have to scramble, and they don't have the proverbial pot to do you-know-what in, so they have to get money together somehow or other, and they get the money to bail out their loved one, fearing that the most horrible things will happen to the person. So if you don't want to deal with those scuzzy smugglers who are among the lowest forms of life on this planet, even lower than pond scum, then what you do is you get an agriculture visa or a student visa. And instead of crawling across the desert in 130-degree weather and worry about scorpions and worry about rattlesnakes and the banditos, you just stroll into the United States having sipped a nice drink on the airplane and then get in a car and disappear into the woodwork, having been admitted to America to work on a farm or be a student in some school that doesn't exist, and they're here. I mean, frankly, if I had the option and I was looking to be an illegal alien, I wouldn't run the border. And it was so interesting that Mayor Bloomberg himself made the same point. Why do you need to have a smuggler when you can just come here on a tourist visa and just don't bother going home? He was actually, if you can imagine this, providing a how-to primer for would-be illegal aliens. You really can't make this stuff up. These folks are absolutely working contrary to the best interests of our country and our citizens. So here's the deal. The Agriculture Department, which is involved with the farms, is now teaching their people that it's a wonderful thing to be an illegal alien in the United States, because after all, according to this chant, all of our forefathers were illegal aliens. There's a little problem with the story, though. At the time that this country was founded, there were no immigration laws. At the time that this country was founded, there was no proper procedure for entering the United States. You brought your boat to the shore, you got off the boat, and you were here. There were no customs and CBP inspectors, you know, customs and border protection inspectors. There were no passports. There were no visas. There was no established process. But they make it sound as though, oh, they were illegal aliens too. It's absolutely astonishing. It's astonishing. And meanwhile, besides providing a wrong history lesson that obviously twists people's heads in a sideways direction so that they don't even understand the issue properly, it also cost the taxpayers, you and me, hundreds of thousands of dollars given to a Chicago firm. I really wish I knew who was in that company and what links they may or may not have had. You know, it just makes you curious. I'm not saying there was any impropriety that way. But, you know, I just worry when I hear Chicago. I keep thinking of Sean Connery in the Untouchables when he talked about the Chicago way, you know. So here we have a Chicago firm apparently teaching employees of the Agriculture Department that our forefathers were all a bunch of illegal aliens anyway, illegal immigrants. God, do we use the word alien. This is astonishing beyond words. This training, as far as I can tell, and as far as I'm sure you can tell, had nothing to do with the job that these people were hired to do in the first place. But I do fear that it was purposely done at the Agriculture Department to perpetuate this myth that borders don't matter, immigration status doesn't matter, we're a nation of immigrants, and in fact the people who founded this country were illegal immigrants. George Washington, I guess, and Thomas Jefferson, and all of those founding fathers of America, I guess according to this company, were illegal aliens. I really wonder what our founding fathers would be thinking about when they hear this nonsense, this insanity, this distortion of truth and fact. We've really entered the Twilight Zone. We've entered the George Orwell Newspeak Zone. It is astonishing to me that our government would squander hundreds of thousands of dollars to teach bad history to people, and where the lesson certainly wouldn't do anything to help them to do their job more efficiently. This is absolutely outrageous. You can't make it up. If this was on Saturday Night Live, you'd have to scratch your head and say, that was a dumbass routine. This isn't Saturday Night Live, folks. This is our federal government. Our federal government and this administration. In fairness, the immigration crisis that we are now facing didn't happen overnight. You know, Jimmy Carter started the nonsense, you can't use the word alien, oh no. Even though the word alien is in the law, it says that the word alien simply means any person who's not a citizen or national. But good old Jimmy Carter, oh no, you can't do that. And in fact, we were told that we had to call illegal aliens undocumented workers, and during that census back then, because he was in the White House, agents were forbidden from arresting illegal aliens unless they got clearance from headquarters. Sounds very much like what we're seeing now with Mr. Obama, doesn't it? Clearly, Carter was Mr. Obama's mentor, or as I like to say, dementor. So here we have yet another example of anarchy in the ranks. And again, I want you to remember why we have immigration laws, to protect jobs and lives of American citizens. And we have cities declaring themselves to be sanctuaries. And absolutely nothing is being done to punish those cities that refuse to enforce immigration laws. I just saw a headline a day or two ago where California will now no longer honor all detainers lodged by immigration. For those of you not familiar with it, a detainer is a document, and God knows I served enough of these on prisons, so that if an agent goes into a jail and finds out that Joe Smith is an illegal alien from Canada and that you have a want on this guy, because when he gets out, we're going to try to deport him, you lodge a detainer. And that detainer says that this person who's in your custody is not to be released without notifying immigration first, so we can take him into custody to seek his deportation from the United States. California said, well, maybe we just won't do that. We don't know if we like the idea that you might deport anybody. If you look at Title 8, United States Code, Section 1324, it deals with smuggling, harboring, aiding, abetting, shielding, concealing, and so forth. And it deems such activities to be felonies with a punishment of 5 years in jail. So in theory, every time an official refuses to honor a detainer, that's a 5-year felony that's being committed. And it's so blatant that they just come out and say, yeah, we're not going to tell you. Now imagine if there was a guy wanted for bank robbery or tax evasion. Imagine if the IRS lodged a notice and said, we want Joe Smith, he failed to pay his taxes. Do you think that the states would say, oh, we're not going to tell the IRS that this guy is in our custody so they can take him into their custody because he's committed, you know, felonies where tax law is concerned? Of course that's not going to happen. But somehow, where immigration is concerned, all bets are off. This administration has all but declared the United States to be the first borderless country on the planet. A country without a border, according to Ronald Reagan, is no country at all. I'm not the biggest Ronald Reagan fan, but there was something to what he said. I have a slightly different way of saying it. A country without borders can no more stand than can a house without walls. We define a country by its borders. You know, a couple of years ago, I was invited by MSNBC to travel to San Diego University, and they put me up in a beautiful hotel right on the beach. It was a beautiful place to be. And Rosario Dawson, the young lady, the actress who's been in so many movies, she's an amazing actress, very pretty woman. She was in Men in Black 2. She's been in a whole slew of films. I'm not even going to start listing them, but she's a very active actress, very talented. She was on stage with me and said that borders were imaginary lines. I wanted very much, and I didn't have the opportunity because when there's a moderator, you can't respond to everything. But she referred to borders as being imaginary lines. And I so desperately wanted to say to Rosario, young lady, I'm sure that with the money you earn in Hollywood, you own a beautiful home and you're entitled to it. That's what goes with being an actress. Do you think the property lines around your home are imaginary? You know, when you go to buy a house or even go to refinance your mortgage, one of the first things that happens is that a surveyor comes out and makes sure that the property lines are right. Are those imaginary lines? When treaties are signed after a war and they establish boundaries, are those borders, those boundaries imaginary? I don't think so. When there is a census and they reapportion the delegates, the political representative, whether it's in the House of Representatives or the City Council, they draw up district political lines. Are those imaginary? When you send an envelope, a piece of mail across town or to another part of the world, there are postal zones. And, you know, zip codes, however you want to refer to them. Are those imaginary? See, the problem is there's nothing imaginary about those lines. That's how we as a species do business. And it's not just us. You know, creatures tend to be territorial. Our borders are only imaginary because this administration and the prior administrations have refused to enforce those borders because of free trade. Let's bring in all the goods, let's bring in all the workers, and what has happened through NAFTA and CAFTA and these other deals is that corporations have made lots of money, but farmers in Mexico have lost their homes, their farms to foreclosure because they couldn't compete with ADM and other major American agricultural conglomerates, and this loss of border has made it easier for drugs to come into the country, for criminals to come into our country. All because there is a push to eliminate America's borders at a time when we've never needed our borders more than today. That's not to say that we shouldn't have trade. We have to have trade. I'm not an isolationist. But, you know, when you buy a house, the house usually comes equipped with a front door that has a peephole and a doorbell. And that's done so that the homeowner can make a conscious, intelligent decision as to whether or not to permit a stranger into his home. I did a speech a couple of weeks ago in Washington, and I made a point that perhaps will resonate with you. I said that knock-knock jokes are universally known and accepted throughout the world. Everybody knows what a knock-knock joke is, because the concept that a stranger walks up to someone's front door and knocks on the door to identify the fact that he or she is there seeking entry is universal. So you knock on the door, and the homeowner says, who's there? And that's the basis for the knock-knock jokes, right? Why then, with all of this universal understanding of the issue of borders, is this even a matter for debate? If you left your door wide open at night, and God forbid someone came into the home and assaulted you and stole your stuff, and you called the police and said, you know, I didn't lock the door last night. I left it open. I went to sleep, and some guy broke in and beat me up and stole, you know, my valuable possessions and so forth, damaged all kinds of things. Do you think your insurance company is going to pay your claim? They're going to look at you, and they're going to say, you out of your mind? You failed to exercise good judgment. You failed to exercise common sense and protect your property. How do you protect your property? You lock your door. How common is it? Well, think about how many locksmiths have work in America putting locks on doors. Go into anybody's pockets, unless they're homeless, you're going to find a set of keys. Why on earth do they have keys in their pockets? Because everybody understands this concept that you secure your belongings behind a locked door. Countries similarly secure themselves and their citizens and their resources behind secure borders. It's not that difficult a parallel to grasp. Yet we have a president of the United States who will not secure the borders, who will not enforce the laws, who basically says if someone breaks into your home and they make their way upstairs to your bedroom, you need to now set up the guest room for them because there's some kind of an entitlement for that illegal alien to now live in your house, that illegal entrant, that burglar, to live in your home. Well, that's what we're doing with illegal aliens. If you can get past the border, you're home free. And we're hearing it not just from Obama. We've heard it from Chuck Schumer. We've heard it from Harry Reid. We've heard it from Nancy Pelosi. We've heard it from John McCain. We've heard it from so many politicians on both sides of the aisle about the need to provide a pathway to citizenship for illegal aliens. Why? Because we have this false argument that so many people listen to the false argument repeated often enough. It's the idea of the big lie. Repeat a stupid lie often enough and people start to think it's true. Well, the argument is, we can't deport 11 million, so what are we going to do? Well, first of all, there's a lot more than 11 million. But what does that mean? What percentage of people who speed are actually caught by the police? 1%? Less than 1%? I can't think of a single time that I get behind the wheel when I haven't exceeded the speed limit. Now, it doesn't mean I've gone 100 miles an hour, but if you get on a 50-mile-an-hour roadway and go 55 miles an hour, you're speeding. If you're driving around in your local neighborhood and the speed limit is 30 and you're going 33, 34 miles an hour, you're speeding. Well, you know, does anyone say, well, because everybody ignores the speed limit, let's take down all the speed signs and let's forget about enforcing the laws? Has anybody ever offered that kind of an argument? Of course not. You're not going to hear that argument either. But when we talk about immigration, the first thing that we hear is, well, you can't deport them all. Great. So if we can't deport them all, let's make them into citizens. In fact, you know, earlier I talked about Miss Dawson, Rosaria Dawson, and she was a Men in Black too. And I've often joked that I think if the president had his way, he would declare the ICE agents, and he almost hasn't at this point, in fact, Men in Black, you know. Unless some creature arrives at a flying saucer, don't mess with them. You know, anybody born on the planet Earth ought to be a U.S. citizen, I'm going to guess, is what Mr. Obama would tell you. Of course, if the Men in Black went after some creature that had three heads and six legs, they'd probably get accused of species profiling, wouldn't they? But this is the lunacy, folks, that we're dealing with. And what's disturbing to me is that when we see the protests by the illegal aliens screaming about, you know, what their demands are, how they're hiding in the shadows. They're not hiding in the shadows. They're standing on street corners with megaphones. I've never seen anybody hide that way. I've never played hide and seek that way. Have you? But what I want to know is why we as Americans haven't approached the politicians and said, enough is enough is enough. You see, if you want to be represented, then you have to make your demands known. When we go to a restaurant, we're very specific about the food that we want to eat, the way that we want it prepared. It's not enough to say, throw some slop on the plate, I'll eat it. We're very specific. And we tell them not only what we want, but how we want it prepared. And if it's not done right, we're very likely going to send it back. And if that doesn't work, we're going to leave and go elsewhere. We make our demands known. Now, perhaps those of you listening to me are a little bit more motivated. And obviously, I can't see you if you raise your hands, which is kind of how the Border Patrol, I guess, counts illegal aliens, you know, have people not present raise their hand. But if you ask your neighbors, if you ask people, how many have actually contacted an elected representative and made their demands known, only a few hands go up. Only a few hands. Living in a democratic republic, we have an absolute responsibility to ourselves, to our neighbors, to our children, to their children, to be very specific. We're just weeks away from the next presidential election. four more years of the lunacy that we have seen with this administration is enough to keep me awake at night. This idea that we won't enforce laws and that what the Congress has to say isn't even a speed bump to this president is disturbing. When he talked about his so-called Dream Act nonsense, I wrote some commentaries, as you probably know, for Fox News Latino, and I said that what he called prosecutorial discretion, I referred to as prosecutorial deception. And then when I addressed a bunch of military folks, I called it prosecutorial excretion. And indeed, it is excretion. Because the idea of the prosecutorial discretion is to say we're not going to deal with minor infractions of law. Now, I don't agree that running our border is that minor because, again, in this era of terrorism and transnational gangs, you have to worry why they're here. In fact, if you found an intruder in your house, the most likely thing you would first say to that intruder is, what are you doing here? Because your concern is, why did they break in? And the problem is you don't know. And the problem is when someone runs the border, you don't know if they're simply looking for a job or if they've committed some heinous crimes in another country or if they're here to do harm to us. You don't know. But it goes beyond that because the president said he wasn't going to do anything with these people because there's a lack of resources. And then he turns around and creates a bureaucratic operation that will make lawful immigrants have to wait on another long line. We are talking potentially about a couple of million or more illegal aliens who can't prove who they are, but who will come forward and say, oh, yes, I'm one of those young people that you talked about, Mr. President. I'm 30 years old because under that program, you're good to go up till age 31. They could lie about their name. They could lie about when they came here. Remember, if you run the border, there's no record of your entry. So the guy that got here last Thursday could say he's been here for 8 years. All he's got to do is get a transcript from some school. How do you prove that it's not his transcript? And I will tell you, there will be no face-to-face interviews. They've already established that. So if you're a terrorist, and they know it already, believe me, this is the golden opportunity. I did a congressional hearing about my concerns about comprehensive immigration reform when I came to call it the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. And I was very clear. And what I said at the hearing was that if anybody voted for comprehensive reform and provided millions of illegal aliens with official identity documents, even though we can't verify who they are, then anyone who makes that possible should be given the MVP award by Al-Qaeda. Well, I certainly think that the president deserves the MVP award from Al-Qaeda for this program that he claims resolves an issue because Congress didn't do its job. Well, Congress did its job. It voted down the legislation. He said it's about prosecutorial discretion to use limited resources wisely. That's baloney, because he's taking resources he doesn't have to provide a benefit to millions of illegal aliens who can't prove who they are and who have no right to work here, and create at the same time competition for lawful American workers, whether they're U.S. citizens or lawful immigrants who waited their turn, abided by the law, and now are made to feel like a bunch of fools because these people, the line jumpers, are going to get premier service. This is insanity. It makes a mockery of our laws and sends a dangerous message to people around the world. And what does it say? Come to America, violate our borders, violate our laws, and we will reward you for it. We will reward you for it. So now, answer the simple question, not for me, but for you. What does that say about America's resolve and sense of fairness? We were raised to believe that we are a country of law, weren't we? Maybe, perhaps, not so much today. Not so much today. Not when illegal aliens, by the millions, are likely to wind up getting employment authorization at a time when American families and lawful immigrant families of every race, religion, and ethnicity are facing the prospect of descending below the poverty line. One in six Americans is now believed to be living below the poverty line. One in four American children now believed to be living below the poverty line. And so many of our fellow Americans are more concerned with who's going to win the playoffs, who's going to win the pennant, who's going to win Dancing with the Stars. Astonishing stuff, folks. This election, I believe, puts America at crossroads. It's important to get our voices heard. It's also important to remember that not only is the action in the White House, but it's going to be in the Congress. It's going to be in the House of Representatives, and every one of those seats is up for grabs. Every one of those seats is up for grabs. And more than a third of the Senate seats are up for grabs. We need to be clear with our elected representatives. We need to convince them that we're not as stupid as they hope that we are. And we need to do the same thing with people who are working on the city, state, and local levels as well. If you have politicians who think that it's acceptable to create a sanctuary for illegal aliens, meaning that people that run the border have nothing to fear from law enforcement, you're inviting into your community criminals and bad guys. It's not to say that everybody who runs the border is a terrorist or a criminal. It's not what I'm saying. But the problem is that with no screening process in place, because that's why people run the border, to evade that screening process, you have to know that a percentage of the people that evade that process do so because they have criminal histories or criminal intentions or may be involved with terrorism. And that's simply because if you look at the law, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, I'll say it again slowly, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, enumerates the categories of aliens who by law are supposed to be kept out. It starts with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer mental illness and are violent or are sex offenders, convicted felons, human rights violators, war criminals, gang members, prostitutes, drug traffickers, war criminals, spies, terrorists, and the list goes on. These are the folks that we need to keep out of the United States. So when people say, oh, immigration laws aren't important, they're among the most important laws that we have. In fact, immigration very often is something that is enforced, and borders are something that is enforced in many countries by their military. Because the whole point to a military is to keep a country's enemies as far from its shores as possible. How on earth can our valiant soldiers in all branches of the military accomplish that primary objective of keeping our enemies as far from our shores as possible when we already have unknown millions, perhaps tens of millions, of illegal aliens from almost every country on the planet, and we have no way of knowing who's here, what their backgrounds are, what their affiliations are, and as a consequence, we have no way of knowing why they're here. We live in a perilous era. This certainly does nothing to enhance national security or protect our communities from the bad guys. This certainly does nothing to help get Americans working. Because as more illegal aliens enter the United States, as more illegal aliens are processed for employment authorization, or simply work in violation of law, knowing full well that no one's going to look for them anyway, it makes it that much more difficult for American workers and lawful immigrant workers to find gainful employment in the United States. This is nutty. Makes no sense. But the time has come that we, the people, need to speak up and be heard. And that, folks, is why I always like to make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. I'm going to wrap up the program. It's a couple of minutes over the time limit. But it's always good to spend Fridays with you. Look forward to seeing you next time. But meanwhile, folks, please go to my websites, michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com, and especially pay a visit to capsweb.org in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Good night, everybody. Have a terrific weekend. See you next time.